This message comes from NPR sponsor Planet Oat. No deep thinking here. Planet Oat oat milk is rich, creamy, and an excellent source of calcium with vitamins A and D. Also, Planet Oat's unsweetened varieties have 0 grams of sugar. Visit planetoat.com for more.
You're listening to Shortwave from NPR. Hey, Shortwavers. Emily Kwong here. Today, we've got a mystery on the cutting edge of science, a mystery that links the entire planet together. And here's where it starts. With the footsteps of our very own Lauren Sommer from NPR's Climate Desk.
Yep, those are my feet, wearing crampons, and I'm walking on top of Greenland's massive ice sheet. It's just an unbelievably huge piece of ice that covers basically the whole country. And here's where this slice of the mystery ends, 2,000 miles away.
Is that a whale?
It's a North Atlantic right whale. They're highly endangered. And in recent years, dead whales have been showing up in places that no one expected them to be.
Oh, wait. Okay, so we started with ice on Greenland and are ending with endangered whales. Are these two connected?
That's what scientists are starting to believe. There's a lot of news these days about melting ice, right? Because as the climate gets hotter, polar ice is disappearing and it can feel really far away, right?
Right. Yeah, it's bad, but it's literally happening at the end of the planet.
Yeah. Well, now weird things are happening all over the globe and scientists are starting to figure out that it's connected to melting ice. There's these, huge cold spots on the planet. They're linked to everywhere else through the Earth's fundamental processes, things like weather and oceans.
Yeah. And I guess as ice disappears in the Arctic, that would affect everything else. It would cause a ripple effect felt around the world.
Yep. And all this week, we at the Climate Desk will be here bringing you 3 stories from all over the world about these unexpected connections that really affect people every day.
Okay. So today on the show, ice is melting increasingly fast as the climate gets hotter. What does that mean for our Earth? Today, we go to Greenland to talk about a chain reaction that's disrupting entire ecosystems in the ocean. You're listening to Shortwave from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. When you keep your stress bottled up, it can eat away at you. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to make them better. Try BetterHelp Online Therapy, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp at BetterHelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month.
The day's top headlines, local stories from your community, your next podcast binge listen. You can have it all in one place, your pocket. Download the NPR app today.
Okay, Lauren Sommer, to unravel this mystery, we should probably start at the beginning and at the very end of the earth with Greenland's ice sheet. What was it like to visit?
It was pretty awe-inspiring, I have to say. We started climbing it, where the ice meets the land, kind of at the bottom. And it's like climbing an actual mountain. We were there with a research team from the University of Sheffield. And there's just these big, craggy peaks of ice, these deep holes, crevasses. And because it was a warm August day, the surface of the ice sheet was kind of alive.
It sounds like it's melting.
That's water pouring off the ice. First it's in these little streams, and those flowed into actual rivers on top of the ice. And then the river kind of just disappears into this dark, terrifying hole in the ice. Andrew Soule, who is a researcher at the University of Sheffield, told me it's called a moulin, and it happens when the river finds a crack.
Forces the crack to just penetrate through the ice. It's called hydrofracture.
So it's a waterfall.
It's basically a waterfall, yeah. A cylindrical waterfall through
down
the ice.
To the ice.
Yeah.
Which goes 1,000 feet down.
Lauren, I'm sure you've read about this phenomenon, but what was it like to see it in real life?
Just seeing it and realizing how massive it is and what a huge role it will play, it really struck me. It just is at a scale that's just so hard to wrap your brain around, just how much ice is sitting there. Mm-hmm. And seeing the melt, in particular, this thing that we cover and talk to people about all the time, really was striking as well, because this melting process is speeding up as the climate gets hotter. It's going faster and faster. I mean, since 2002, Greenland's ice sheet has been losing 280 billion tons of ice per year. And scientists are really trying to figure out how much will that accelerate, because it's not an easy question to answer.
Why is that?
Well, when you have this huge, you know, chunk of ice three times the size of Texas, melting is really complex. It's not like the ice in your glass. And Andrew showed me one way they investigate that.
Okay, go for it, Ryan.
One of his students had waded out into the river. He was tethered by a rope, by the way, I should say, for safety. And he released this bottle of very bright, non-toxic dye into the water.
So now the whole river downstream of Ryan has turned a really fluorescent, bright pink. And it's, to be honest, quite a surreal sight, surrounded by the lovely white ice and the sort of blue turquoise colour of the water.
That does sound striking. What does dyeing the water in this way help them determine?
Yeah, so what happens is the water with that dye, it drops to the bottom of the ice sheet, it goes underneath it, and then the team has a sensor where the river comes out, which is at the base of the ice sheet far away, and it tells them how long the water took to get there. And what happens under the ice sheet is important, because at certain times of year, there's so much meltwater there, it makes the whole ice sheet slide. And that moves it to a lower elevation where it's warmer, which makes it melt faster.
So the melting water causes more melt. The whole process speeds itself up.
Yeah, exactly. And eventually, all this melting water makes its way to the Atlantic Ocean, where it can have very big consequences, because that's where it runs into a major ocean current. It's called the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, or AMOC.
Nice name. Also, didn't know currents had names, obviously, because how else would we be able to understand it? But okay, so there's this current called AMOC.
Yes, AMOC for short. And to picture this current, I want you to think about a conveyor belt. So the top of this conveyor belt is a big current of warm water that goes up the east coast of the U.S. It goes north all the way to Greenland. Amy Bauer, who studies ocean currents at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, explained this to me. And she says, near Greenland, the salty water cools off. It gets heavy and it sinks to the bottom of the ocean.
And then go back towards the equator, down deep, carrying that cold water, kind of a return flow.
Oh, so it sounds like the bottom of the conveyor belt. It comes back on itself.
Yeah, it returns, yeah. And it's powered by the sinking that happens near Greenland. So that's kind of the engine, basically.
Okay.
But if you remember, near Greenland, there's also a lot of fresh water pouring into the ocean from the melting.
Now, the fresh water is like, I don't want to sink. I'm very light. I don't want to sink. So fresh water tends to inhibit this sinking motion.
It could slow down the entire current. That's what studies show is likely to happen as the climate keeps changing. There are signs it may already be happening, but, you know, some scientists I spoke to said it needs to be watched for longer to be sure.
But Lauren, what would be so bad about this giant ocean conveyor belt, this current slowing down?
Yeah, I mean, this current is kind of like the circulation system of the planet. It connects to the whole thing. And it's tied to everything from, you know, what the ocean is like to what the weather is like. Mm. And in this case, the current is already changing in one part of the Atlantic, and it's having big effects. And I spoke to someone who's seen it, Philip Hamilton. He's a scientist at the Anderson Cabot Center for Ocean Life. Last summer, he was on a boat searching for North Atlantic right whales.
We've only been able to find about 20 whales in this large area, and we're expecting to find more like 70 or 80.
So he actually knows most of the whales individually, because there are only about 340 of them left. And normally Philip would be looking for them in the Gulf of Maine during the summer. But around 2015, the whales began disappearing from there. They just weren't there. Now he's looking hundreds of miles away in Canadian waters, where some of the right whales have turned up.
We saw a calf appears to have a propeller cut on its chin after only 8 months of life. Pretty distressing.
And over a two-year period, 21 right whales were killed in Canada, many hit by ships or tangled in these long ropes from fishing gear.
Whew, that's very sad. So what happened that caused this sudden shift in the whale population, such that they moved and are now kind of in dangerous waters?
Yeah, I mean, when they got to Canada, they weren't expected there. So there weren't any protections from the ship traffic or from fishing gear, you know, that poses a big threat to them. The whales needed to move, though, because they were following their food. Right whales really depend on one tiny plankton, a copepod to be exact, called Calanus finmarchicus. That's what they used to eat in the Gulf of Maine. But the Gulf of Maine is changing fast. The water there is heating up really quickly, faster than 97% of the global ocean. It's largely because the ocean current has shifted near the Gulf of Maine. It's kind of pushing more warm water into that area, basically. And those plankton just don't survive well in those temps.
Okay, so the natural habitat of these whales is changing. Whales had to adapt to find their food again and migrate. Just is such an example of how climate change sometimes isn't a gradual process at all. It sometimes can happen within a few short years.
Yeah, and the big question is just how that will keep changing. Will it keep changing? That's what ecologist Aaron Meyer Gutbrod from the University of South Carolina told me.
Which puts us all in this state of emergency, because then we don't really know where they're going to go, which means that we can't effectively protect their habitat.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, just what's going on with right whales. We know because we've been tracking them super carefully. But, you know, think about all the other ocean life. There's entire ecosystems out there and a lot of unknowns about how these changing ocean currents could just alter the entire food chain.
We're just entering this time of extreme uncertainty. You know, we can't look at the past and allow that to shape the future because humans have kind of thrown a wrench in what used to be natural processes.
Wow. Okay. So we started with ice on top of Greenland, followed it into the Atlantic Ocean, through the ocean food chain, all the way to these endangered whales. You've really shown us how deeply connected things are on this planet. How if something happens in one part of the world, it can have ripple effects that reach everywhere and are incredibly complex and not super well known.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we wanted to do this whole project, is because there's this race to understand those connections as they're changing in real time.
Yeah.
There's a hope, I mean, that we can forecast the changes better going forward, you know, so we can kind of be prepared. That would obviously matter to right whales and to ocean life. It would matter to the people who depend on the oceans, too. You know, it's why just so many scientists we spoke to say this is really the time to kind of do that research, to have a better handle on this ice melt and these really complex ocean currents so we can kind of understand the stakes here, the stakes of climate change, basically.
Lauren, thank you so much for this reporting. I cannot wait to talk to you and our colleagues on the Climate Desk more this week.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Liz Metzger. It was edited by our managing producer, Rebecca Ramirez, and fact-checked by Britt Hansen. Robert Rodriguez was our audio engineer. Brendan Crump is our podcast coordinator. Beth Donovan is our senior director, and Anya Grundman is our senior vice president of programming. I'm Emily Kwong. Thanks, as always, for listening to Shortwave from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Easy Cater. Committed to helping companies, from nonprofits to the Fortune 500, find food for meetings and company events. With online ordering and 24/7 live support, learn more at easycater.com.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.